Subscribe to the Good Show podcast with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This is Good Show with Edison Bunkus.
This one's good!
On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, it finally happened. It's a good show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We were so close on the first snowfall of the year to J.D. Bunkus not making it for opening puck drop of this program, but he made it heroically. And we gave him all the praise in the world for running from St. George Station to Bloor and Jarvis. Today, just too much, though. Could not handle a subway closure between Keele and Ossington. He is en route, but will not make it because the show's starting right now and he's not in the room. So it's Ben Ennis and Scott MacArthur, the Oakville boys, back together.
Yes.
He's kind enough to stick around for a couple minutes.
Shout out to Oakville Trafalgar High School, home of the Red Devils.
That's right.
And you can't, like, JD can't Uber here today because the roads are a mess.
Yeah.
And he can't run.
Yeah. I mean, he's trying to run.
You'd be slipping all over the sidewalks, right?
Yeah. Well, you follow Rex Chapman on Twitter, I imagine.
I have some blocker charge.
Yeah. Well, yesterday he had a great video of the girl who was trying to run in the snow. She's like, there's low impact, and then just totally bailed. So I imagine that's JD Bunkus trying to run from High Park to Ossington Station and then getting on a subway and arriving here, I don't know, in 15 minutes or so.
By the way, he's going to have to be a true pro about this when he gets in, but, like, we're all neurotic about our jobs, right?
Yes.
So it's going to be, like, if I was in his situation and I feel for him, I'd be grumpy,
dude,
for the entire show, but I'd have to pretend like I wasn't.
Yeah.
Because we're all routine-oriented, right?
Dude, not only that, but I'm paranoid when it comes to being punctual. And, like, maybe to a fault, like, I really push myself to be very early because, like, that's the nightmare of all nightmares for me. It's just me. I have a keen sense of responsibility that I want to make sure I'm very prepared and places on time and early. And listen, it's worked for him, but perhaps a routine change is about to take place.
Well, but here's the thing, Ben. I mean, you are a father of two.
That's
so
true.
You have natural-born alarm clocks.
That's right.
Like, you can't. You don't sleep probably past 4:30 in the morning, right?
I mean, I was definitely up at 5 today when my kid came up to the bedside and was like, hey, what's going on? Let's watch some TV. And I was like, no, my alarm says I have another hour to sleep, sir. So back you go. Go, I don't care where, just somewhere else in the house that's not here. But yeah, 6 o'clock is normally when I'm up. So JD will arrive whenever he arrives. I'm sure you guys did plenty of Leafs. We have a Leafs hour. So I'm not going to start with Leafs with you. How about I start with this? Because I was putting together some of the stats to make the case for the Toronto Raptors. But anyone that's watched the Raptors, you don't need these because you watch the team and you know just how damn good they are. But look at, or you can't look because it's on my computer. But listen to this. What if I told you the Toronto Raptors had the second best point differential in the entire NBA? And, you know, yesterday helped, although winning by 40 points would help more than winning by 20. They're first in opponents' field goal percentage in the entire NBA. They're first in their own three-point percentage. And how about the competition they faced? Hasn't been cupcakes. 14th strongest schedule faced this season. They have the 30th strength of schedule remaining. They have the easiest schedule in the entire NBA the rest of the season. Haven't lost two in a row, of course. And, of course, they've been without Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka for 10 games, and Ibaka returns yesterday, but it's 11 games now that Kyle Lowry has missed. What would you say if I told you that was the case for the Toronto Raptors this season?
It's hard to imagine a team that employed DeMar, and I don't want to rag on DeMar, but employed DeMar as long as it did, would be tops in the league in three-point shooting percentage.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, these guys are just getting it done. And to pile on to the stats, Ben, it isn't just that. It's that they are winning and have done a lot of that without two of their best players, Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka, and Ibaka, of course, came back last night. And the injuries to Lowry and Ibaka forced Nick Nurse to go to the bench out of necessity far sooner this season than I think he wanted to.
Well, he didn't want to go to them at all, like, to start the year.
I mean, they were running 7 or 8 guys in some of the first games of the season before Kyle and Serge went down. And out of that necessity, he has found some players who can get it done for him, whether it's Hollis Jefferson or Davis. Chris Boucher has done a nice job when been given the opportunity.
And one of those finds is also injured now, too, Matt Thomas.
Right.
He was drilling threes at a pretty good clip before he went down,
too. So you've been through all of this crap.
Yeah.
Typically, you get the two West Coast trips each year, right? You don't knock them all off. But arguably the harder of the two with the two LA games.
Oh, for sure.
Has been completed. And with everything you've been through, you're 15-4. What's fascinating to me about the top of the Eastern Conference is out of the top five teams, and Milwaukee is at the top and has won 11 in a row, 17-3, only the Bucks, and it's only happened once, only the Bucks have dropped a home game.
Right.
So the Sixers, the Celtics, the Raptors, all undefeated.
No, I know.
At home.
It is wild.
And so this reshuffling of the deck chairs in the Eastern Conference, Jimmy Butler going from Philly to Miami, Al Horford from Boston to Philadelphia, Kyrie from Boston to Brooklyn. We know KD is a net, although he's not going to play this year. Like all of the shuffling of the deck chairs there, these top flight teams have not taken really any time to organize themselves with their new looks. They're out of the gate strong.
Do you know that they snapped their sellout streak yesterday?
So this got to be the deal with that. The weather sucked.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're counting on, I think they had 18-1 something there.
Yeah, 18,132.
So if you're 500, 700, 1,000 shy of a sellout, you're counting on the remaining to be walk-up?
No, for sure.
Nobody's leaving the house last night.
I really, like it was bad yesterday, no question. I was on the roads yesterday. I was driving back because I'm, you know, husband of the year. I took my wife out for her birthday to Niagara Falls. We stayed a night out there. That was nice. Very pleasant.
Did you, you probably lost some money at the casino?
Okay, I was wondering where you're going. Did I?
No, I wasn't going to ask that question. I would assume.
Played at the, because, yeah, you, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was.
Go on.
First of all, it's 9 in the morning, not 9 at night. So we're not turning this into Blue Nuit.
All right.
Sportsnet 590, the fan version. We're just going to ask about the casino play.
Yeah.
Did you drop some cash?
Accidentally. So it wasn't so bad. And I talked to JD about this last week on Friday. My wife, love her to death, obviously. We've been together forever. In fact, we were doing the math and I mean, it's pretty
easy
math
to do. Are you high school sweethearts?
Yeah, I was going to say.
So she's an OT girl?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've been together longer than we've been apart. So, yeah.
And you're quite old now.
I'm ancient.
Yeah.
I'm decrepit and ancient.
Yeah.
Yeah. My best years are way behind me. But she is, again, no caveats needed because we've been together for so long. But the worst person in the world to go to a casino with because... One, I was shocked. So we went to Casino Niagara. We were staying in the Sheraton, but we went to Casino Niagara, which is, I don't know, it's a pretty big casino. It's a pretty big draw. And I've been there before, and it's been very busy. And it's a Saturday night, and I know it's winter, but it's a Saturday night, which you would think is big for gambling. So you go to the blackjack table. What's the lowest limit you expected to find? I thought, like, if we found a $20 table, that'd be pretty good. They had a $10 blackjack table. Which is, man, you take out a couple $100, which, yeah, sure, isn't nothing. But, like, in gambling terms, if you lose $200 at a casino, you can live with that. $200 at a $10 table can last you an hour, even if things are going real poorly. But the way my wife reacts to even the loss of a $10 blackjack hand, and if you believe in mojo or, like, vibes at all, is a bad scene, man. So
is she over the shoulder as you're playing?
Oh, my God. Is she ever? I mean, she's, before the table filled up, she was sitting in the seat next to me. But then afterwards, yeah, over my shoulder. And then understood what she was doing. So she's like, I got to take a walk. I got to go to the bathroom for a bit.
Does she know and understand the game well enough to know that if somebody around the table doesn't go by the book, is there some side eyes? Is there some stink eyes going on?
No, here's, and at a $10 table, I can't get too upset either. But here is, you just reminded me of the funniest takeaway for me for the entire weekend is we're talking about, oh, the dealer got hot or the dealer was doing well or they switched the dealers. And she's like, oh, yeah, dealers must be under such incredible stress. I was like, what are you talking about? It's like, well, like, if they lose a bunch in a row, they're probably fired, right? I was like, what are you talking about? It's like, And like, how do they get so good? It's like, no, they're not just playing. They're not just going with their gut. It's not like they're also looking at the blackjack rules and they're looking at how many face cards are out there. And yeah, maybe I'll hit when I wouldn't normally. They're hitting on 16 every time.
Yes.
But yeah, she thought they were just going rogue and just going by their gut. But yeah, no, it was all right. I lost like 20, 30 bucks, whatever. And she wanted to leave. It's her birthday. So we left. But it was a nice night overall.
Well, happy birthday, Miss Ennis.
Yeah.
Mama Ennis.
Yeah. No, and God, I'd be lying if I said the sleeping uninterrupted for 10 hours wasn't like one of the best parts of the entire weekend.
No kids.
Yeah, no kids. But yeah, this Raptors season's been so ridiculous. We've talked about the regular season being even more fun than a season ago, just because there's so much unknown with this team.
Well, and there's very rarely is a defending champion considered an underdog.
They are.
Right? And they've clearly, I mean, I don't know where you had them. I had them as a home team in the first round of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think I said 48 wins and the fourth seed. So I had them as a home team, a home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. Thought so 48 is what? 48 and 34? Help me with my disgraceful
good.
Math.
That was pretty good.
I am an OT product, but math courses are not what I thrived in. So I had them at 48 and 34 with home court in the first round. They're going to blow right past that.
Oh, yeah. They're going to crush that.
Now, the question I have, which obviously can't officially be answered until springtime, and with the weather today, I want to think about spring, so we're going to do that, is how deep can they take this?
Mm-hmm.
And are there adjustments? We had Blake Murphy on the morning show on Leadoff this morning. He was talking about the need for a third point guard, a little point guard depth. How deep can they take this run? The one thing I know is that if they go out in the Eastern Conference playoffs, the team that beats them will be bloodied and bruised. It's gonna take a lot to eliminate this Raptors team. They ain't gonna lie down.
No, that's for sure. And so much of it depends on how close to that like top 10, top 5 MVP level Pascal Siakam is. And that was a huge bounce back for him after that brutal showing in Orlando.
Yep.
He was spectacular yesterday. People are starting to take notice. I just got a text from JD Bunkus that he's 5 minutes away. So he wants to take a break so that he can get the most out of the show as possible. But Scotty Mack, you're a true saint and a good man. Thanks for doing this, buddy.
So I just want it on the record
mm-hmm.
that a 49ers fan.
Mm-hmm. I was going to get to it.
Did a Seahawks fan a favor.
Okay, I was going to. Do you have anything quickly to say about your team before we take a break? I mean, they're in trouble now. Seahawks lose. Our Seahawks win tonight, and they're what? They're fifth. They're a wild card team.
It's
right?
coming down, yeah, but it's coming down to Week 17 in Seattle.
It's true,
and that Niners team can beat anybody. Look, am I disappointed they lost? Did I watch that game start to finish? The answer to both questions is yes. But that we had a tough November,
mm-hmm.
Ben, as sports fans, you know, a lot of the hockey stuff going on. I actually sat there yesterday. I'm like, this is reminding me why I like sports. That wasn't a Jared Goff, Patrick Mahomes 2018 blowout where no. It's ding, 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 up and down the field, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. That was crappy weather, grass field, two elite teams, knock down, drag them out. Somebody was going to lose.
No.
That was as full value 3 hours of entertainment as anything in sports could have provided this weekend.
And no, it was great. And you're great. Thanks, buddy.
Happy to do it.
All right, when we come back, J.D. Bunkus apparently is going to be arriving. That'll be interesting. It's a good show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, back to Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The disease of the band of vultures starts with them from the field of hope. Giving in to the villain pouring this way, look this way.
What's up?
Hey.
How you doing?
Great.
Welcome to Good Show, the start of the show. The official start of Good Show. Now starting 9:20. Hey, congratulations on your new time slot.
Hey, you should you should stick around for the first 20 minutes of Hockey Central, see if they'll let you do that. Just so you can punch the clock for your normal allotment.
How much makeup?
Radio.
How much makeup do you think I'd have to do to get rid of the sweaty face I got going on?
Well, the hair, I think, is the first thing people will notice right now. Because you just look red. I don't see sweat pouring down your forehead. You
there was quite a bit.
You look like very tomato-like.
Disheveled?
No, tomato-like. Yeah. And the hair is doing quite a thing. Good thing, like...
Good thing I'm from the Yukon.
Yeah.
And I'm just a husky who just knows how to mush in the snow. Because if I wasn't just the great Yukon husky I am... Who would have known what a time I would have gotten in here?
No,
I just breezing past people. Breezing.
Good thing the Sportsnet Christmas party, which is tonight, isn't like this afternoon. Oh. You didn't have to go there immediately from here.
Oh, no. I was actually thinking good thing that it wasn't that I just didn't happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because then it would have been.
Oh, yeah. It would have been a bad look. It's like,
hey,
Subway was closed, you old hungover boy.
I just need to know I know there's probably a really great explanation for this, but. Can one time someone tell me why when there's a fire or fire investigation at a station, they have to shut down the eight stations beside it?
I mean, probably safety, one.
Yeah, all right. Is it that?
And two, it's like, well, how close do you want them to get? You want to get right to that station right before, and then you can run between the two stations? Like, there's an obvious reason.
This show is now Weather Talk. Talking about Russell Wilson being MVP and an underrated quarterback and getting mad about it. Talking about backup goalies of the Leafs. Gushing about Raptors over the top and how fast I can run in boots in the snow.
Yeah, not very.
Those are our calling cards. What do you mean not very?
Well, I don't know. You didn't make it today.
I didn't make it today, but I ran still from Kiel all the way to Ossington, probably in the ice 20 minutes.
Good job.
I thought so. I was pretty impressed.
All right.
I mean, I'd like to see where the other people were that were, you know, leaving the station at the same time as me.
I will say
that if they do have an event for running in boots on icy surfaces and around people.
They definitely do.
Then I would like to enter.
I will say it's kind of curious that we've had two really significant weather days already this season.
Bing, bing.
Both days.
Fire. Oh, there was a fire.
Hmm.
Sure.
No, it's just curious.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know what to make of that, what that means, what I'm even implying. I'm just saying, like, that's some weird stuff.
Yeah.
Weird, freaky stuff.
People sleep at the switches. I think that's what's going on over here. So what'd you talk about?
We talked a little bit about the Raptors. Okay. I said this.
Yeah.
Raptors have second best point differential in the NBA. They're first in opponent's field goal percentage.
Yep.
They're first in their own three-point percentage. They face the 14th strongest schedule. So, like, middle of the pack. Like, it's not been cupcakes. You know how their remaining strength of schedule stacks up? It's 30th. It's the easiest remaining schedule in the entire NBA. And, of course, they haven't lost two in a row. They're unbeaten at home. They've been without Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka for 10 games, and Serge is back. So it's 11 games now without Kyle Lowry, and the second-best team record-wise in the Eastern Conference.
So, at this point... The only surprises left would be if it regresses, right?
Like, if they just fall off a cliff. Like, this upcoming schedule is maybe their toughest stretch of the entire season with Miami. And then you got the Sixers coming up on the road again.
No, I just mean that if all of a sudden things start falling apart and the Raptors don't look very... Like, there's no more upward surprises. Like, Siakam does that yesterday. And he has the game against Jonathan Isaac. And he go 4-22?
Yep.
He really scuffled Friday night.
No,
really,
brutal.
Really brutal. And Isaac has kind of sneaky had his number a little bit. That was the narrative going into the postseason last year. It was he's the Siakam stopper. And then, of course, he elevated Kawhi in that game, what was it, 2 or 3, when Kawhi was kind of banged up and didn't have one. I can't remember. The Orlando series was the only thing I really remember from it was DJ Augustine and then smashing their lights out.
Yeah, it was hating Nick Nurse because he played Kawhi Leonard 30 minutes in game one and they lost.
Yeah, so... I kept feeling this nagging idea that the Raptors were playing above their weight and that not that it was fraudulent what they were doing, but that, okay, how can Siakam take this leap? You know, like when we were talking during the offseason about Siakam, what was it? It was what's the next step he can take? And it was the whole thing about, well, can you go most improved twice? And all we kept saying was, well, that would be unprecedented. What are we talking about here? That's kind of an impossibility. Why are we putting that expectation on him? That's such a heavy burden to carry. And yet here he did it. Here's Fred VanVleet with another performance where he looks like a starting point guard in the league. Like I already said it on a show a couple of weeks ago, but if you redid their draft, he's a top 10 pick. Mm-hmm. And they got him undrafted. Mm-hmm. OG Anunoby in his draft went, I think, 21st. And if you redrafted his, I think he goes 5-6, somewhere in that range. They've just nailed some picks, and all these guys are turning out to be the real deal. I'm not surprised anymore. Siakam has that game yesterday. He's pulling up from three. He's knocking down everything. He drops 30 points. And you just say, and it's against a good defensive Utah team. Mm-hmm. And he can identify his mismatches. He scores around the basket. He knows when he's got a guy that's not going to, that gives him a gap at the 3-point line, that he's just going to drop a Jimmy in their face.
Mm-hmm. He drops five dimes.
I'm not surprised anymore. It's over. Like, even when you mentioned that strength of schedule thing, I put this in, but Lakers haven't beaten a team above 500 since November 12th.
Yep.
And that's one of the only two teams that's ahead of the Raptors in the standings, the other being the Bucks.
Yep.
I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that the Raptors finish with the best regular season in the NBA. And if we're talking about the roadmap for them to get to a finals, they're an excellent, excellent home team.
Yeah.
We know from past experience what it's like to play here in the postseason.
Mm-hmm. They haven't lost here this year.
No. I kind of think that they are, that the regular season means something to them. They kind of need it. If they're going to be able to be a real title threat, I think that having home court advantage, it significantly changes their odds.
Yeah, and I mean, that was a Kawhi Leonard thing. Hey, 82 practices, right? Like, nothing matters. It doesn't matter. We can be the 4 seed. We can be the 5. We can be the 8 seed and prance into the postseason and have the best player on the floor in every single matchup, and I can carry us over whoever we need in whatever location we need it done. I can do it. And maybe Pascal Siakam is that guy. But, yeah, you don't think the Philadelphia 76ers, the way they showed up in that game to start the season here at Scotiabank Arena, are feeling super comfortable if they don't have home court advantage against the Toronto Raptors in a second round series?
Magnet rims are back.
Magnet rims are back.
The Rondae Hollis-Jefferson one. I thought, okay, all right. If I was the Phillies, if I was a Sixers fan and I was watching that game, I'd be screaming bloody murder that shot went in as well and asking to restart the conspiracy. So, yeah, I think I kept having my doubts about what we were seeing here with Siakam. And it was just kind of in the back of my head. And not that I didn't think he was good or even an all-star. I just thought we were looking at a guy who was, if he could be on a third All-NBA team, that was going to be a great accomplishment. That was going to be a incredible ceiling to achieve from a 27th overall pick that's already, you know, reached the heights of a most improved player and is going to be an all-star. But the more I watch him and the more he shows, I can't help but think that right now he's a top 10 player in the NBA.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, there's some hyperbole coming now from respected writers. Like Royce Young, he writes for ESPN.com, tweeted, Pascal Siakam is top 3 MVP candidate right now. If I was voting today.
Did you just do this to bug me?
Yes, I know. Thanks. It's going to get you annoyed. If I was voting today, I might pick him number 1. He and the Raptors in general have just been flat awesome. Like, I don't think Pascal Siakam is the MVP right now.
I don't think anyone's the MVP right now. It's December 1st.
So what?
Stop. What do you mean, so what? It's annoying. That's the worst. That's actually the worst. That's the lowest of the low sports conversation is doing NBA MVP in December.
Well, tell it to Magic Johnson.
I know.
Who had him 9.
I know.
In his top 16 MVPs to start the season.
I think this is the only way that they can interest people in watching regular season games now. Because they just know, like, with load management and the Clippers punting on certain games and different teams not, you know, Kawhi Leonard saying the regular season is just one big practice, that the only way to engage people in the regular season is with this award.
Or how about this?
What?
Oh, God, this is another one. I don't need to get... Yeah, you're already mad, but I'm just going to add fuel to the fire. ESPN power rankings are out. Where do you think they have the Raptors?
I don't know, 6?
Ooh, 7.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. That's what they're doing. I'm not mad by it. I'm actually mad at Raptors fans and people who are annoyed by it. Because it's not a big deal. It's ESPN is actively trolling you. That whoever's putting this thing together understands that they are getting more clicks and more visibility because Raptors fans are quote tweeting it and putting it every...
No doubt.
If they just make it reasonable and they just have everything the way that it stacks up, they're playing to the insecurity of the fan base.
That's not fun.
I just think it's the same thing as, remember when everyone got riled up about Skip Bayless, but then he actually turned out to be right the first time, not the second time with Kawhi, but with LeBron stuff, where it was like LeBron's going to smash the Raptors in and everybody got upset.
And then
he ended up being right. But then the next time with Kawhi, people were getting upset again. It's like, that's what they do. They're professional provocateurs. Mm-hmm. And I actually think ESPN's a legitimate news organization. I just think that this particular thing, power rankings, you don't get any visibility without having something where someone feels aggrieved. Mm-hmm. And no one feels more aggrieved than this fan base. It's us here in Toronto and Portland. Those are the two places where you know you can play up to the insecurity of the fan base. It used to be Seattle as well because, again, they were in Pacific Northwest, but now they're gone. So these are the two markets that cry foul every single time they're overlooked. And if you don't believe it, listen back to some of the shows that we've done with NBA writers in the past. They all say the same thing. They go, I've been respecting you from the beginning, or I was just kidding, or I was wrong. They
get out of my mentions.
Yeah, exactly. Because Raptors fans populate the mentions of writers who don't say nice quote-unquote things about them or whatever and what have you.
Do you have any other Grand Raptors thoughts? Because I want to ask you a question.
No, go ahead.
So Serge Ibaka returns yesterday, mm-hmm. and that basically took Boucher out of the rotation.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Like, he had 5 minutes in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with that too, right? Yeah. Because Chris Boucher is a nice fallback option, whatever. And he showed you that he can give you, he can be a plus in a rotation spot.
Okay.
Kyle Lowry's on his way back. What happens to Terrence Davis?
I think he'll be fine. I think he's still going to play minutes. They'll, if you, again.
So who's losing them then?
Fred and Kyle. They were playing the first and second most minutes in the NBA when Kyle Lowry went out. Mm. Like, this is a great problem to have. I'm not concerned with this at all. Terrence Davis is going to come
in. No, I'm not concerned about it. I'm just like, I wonder, because Terrence Davis, do think is a much bigger positive than Chris Boucher could.
What's Terrence Davis playing right now?
Yesterday, he played 23 minutes. Yeah.
I bet you that he's right around 20 minutes a night still. Again, man, they didn't have any guards. Mm-hmm. They didn't. They were patchwork when they were playing a seven. Remember, it was a seven-man rotation, and the big issue was who's going to play? How are they going to get these guys off their feet? Mm-hmm. This is it. Terrence Davis is going to play. They're not going to knock him down and have him play zero. He's going to come in for Norm. He's going to spell Norm. He's going to come in. He's going to spell Fred. He's going to spell Kyle. He'll be a 20-minute-a-night guard. He'll play a combo guard position. That's what my guess is. Mm-hmm. He's too good to sit. They know that. Yeah. They're not going to all of a sudden staple him on a bench. Boucher's a different player entirely. Like, Boucher had a nice couple of games, but once you saw a little bit bigger of a sample, it was pretty clear that the Lakers game and the Clippers games were aberrations to a large degree. Like, he can block a shot for you if you need one. He's not a terrific rebounder. He runs the floor well. He's an okay shooter, and he doesn't do much else.
He's an energy guy. Like, listen, I'm not throwing dirt on Chris Boucher.
I'm not either. I'm giving a proper evaluation. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that's what he is. It's fine to lose a Chris Boucher from your roster. And in fact, you feel better about it because if I had one Chris Boucher thought from last night or one Serge Ibaka thought, it was they've really leaned heavily on Marc Gasol over this stretch. And it would be really nice to load manage him just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like on a back-to-back, the Leafs are sitting Jason Spezza. I think the Raptors should consider sitting Marc Gasol for a game.
Yeah, when he's taking heat checks from like the logo, yeah. Like that. Marc
Gasol. That was great. That was really great.
All right. You want to close the book on the Raptors?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm a little now. I'm in an annoyed mood. I had to run in today. You're bringing up MVP in December and doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
And then you're telling me I'm throwing dirt on Chris Boucher because I say he's
a good Canadian. I don't know. Okay. I wouldn't talk ill of him, but yeah, go ahead. Let's throw dirt on the Patriots.
Yeah,
shall we?
I like that.
Because they're big frauds. Oh, you want a break? I don't know. It's weird clocks. Like what we're doing here. We're going to take a weird bizarro break at 9:33, I guess, and resume the program when we return. And then we'll... we're going to do overreactions? Guy shows up 20 minutes late, and now he's directing the show with his microphone off as I'm trying to throw a break. No, it's quite a program we're running here. I guess whatever JD wants, when we return, it's a good show. Ben Ennis, finally JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This is Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, calm down. Feeling good? No. Oh, that made it worse. I'm sorry. You know what? Doing that, as I was saying, and I was like, that's the thing I hate. It's good show, Ben Ennis, JD Vunkus. But yeah, talking about how your mood is perceived, perhaps in a negative light, would only make it worse. So, you know what? Let's just pretend I didn't ask that. Because I think we all know the answer. It's kind of like Scotty Mack this morning did the thing. The other thing, he's like, are you tired? You look tired. You so tired?
I don't care about that because I am tired and I do look tired.
Yeah, and I'm always tired too, despite the fact that I had nice sleep Saturday night for the first time in my life.
The thing is that generally when I've said that, it's been to people I'm dating, but I'm trying to say it in a kind way of, are you tired? Like, you look a little tired.
Maybe I can help you. You want me to clean up or like, I'll make some food. You want some?
You want to go to bed early? Like, what do you want to do? And instead it's, you know, you're not supposed to say that.
Yeah.
All right.
You're really not.
Why not? Who cares?
Horrible.
Stop being such a baby.
Okay. So you in a good mood?
That's different.
And horrible?
Yeah. It's very horrible. Especially since during the break, you're talking to me about showing me a video of people slipping on ice.
Yeah.
And now you're just trying to needle me again. And I know you. Like, that's what you want to do. That's why you brought up the MVP thing. You know, that's dead last thing I'd ever want to talk about.
Yeah.
I even replied to you when you sent me that DM.
I know.
Said that's the dumbest thing I've ever read.
Whoa. And that's a worldwide leader in sports we're talking about here.
Yeah, thank you.
ESPN.
Yeah. All right.
Listen. There's a reason why they're number one.
Yeah. It's going to be a great show today.
Okay. When do you think this show will start to feel normal?
I mean, this is on you.
10 o'clock maybe when we get into the
lease
hour.
This is on you now. Like, right, this is like 100% on you.
No, it's not. It's definitely not on the guy who was 20 minutes late.
Yeah, like I said.
No, definitely not. No, throw me under the bus. No, it's me.
Yeah, no.
It's me.
Throw me under the bus. And then when I get here after doing an amazing job once again of just running from just through the snow once again in the sleet, no problem. Didn't fall down. Risked my neck. Could have fallen. Could have broken my neck. Mm. You don't think someone out there hurt their at least wrist today? Trying to just walk? No, I ran once again in boots. And I get here only to be treated by my supposed friend in a needling fashion who...
Co-worker.
Who sabotages me with all the worst takes and tweets and topics and then says, are you okay? Are you grumpy? On air.
All right, how about
how's
this?
How's that? How's that for fairness?
Let's talk about punts.
Okay.
Oh, because Jake Bailey was so close to taking the lead in punts yesterday. Yeah. Third, the New England Patriots, third in the entire NFL in punts this season.
There was one punt in that. There was two punts actually in that game that were pretty cowardly.
Yeah.
The one to close the first half. I know it was a 4th and 10 and maybe what the...
It's a 57-yard field goal if they tried it.
Yeah, that you couldn't try the field goal. You're on your fourth kicker at this point.
Right, but it's like 20 seconds left, I think.
There was 40 seconds or so, but I still thought you're in a position where you don't convert. You trust that you have one of the league's best defenses. Then there was the weird, that was just an odd game all around, because generally at halftime, you expect Bill Belichick to scheme something up and change something. And it was a lot more of the same. There was another late punt that was kind of strange where you assumed they were going to go for it. They're the team with the best sneak record in the history of the NFL. And they throw a pass. Granted, Mohamed Sanu should have caught it, but even still, you need half a yard. You have Tom Brady. That's kind of his go-to play. Don't do that. And then the weird thing on the goal line after they score a touchdown, they can cut the lead to 10, and they take a delay of game penalty and miss the extra point.
Yeah.
Making it officially a three-score game.
Yeah, you Kai Forbath in his first game for you and his first game in the NFL in like years, and you're like, what's 5 more yards for Kai Forbath on the extra point? Well, it turns out like it's the difference between 1 point and 0 points.
I do love that, though, whenever the kicker misses on something like that, whenever there's a penalty, and that's just the easiest thing for the announcer to do, right? Like, you got to wonder.
Well, but
that was close. That it was one 5 yards closer.
That one did look like 5 yards was the difference.
That was a pretty bad shank, though. You got to have that.
It's Kai freaking Forbath. Yeah.
Still, you got to have it.
He's off the scrap heap.
Got to have it. You're off the scrap heap, but you're still off the scrap heap into the NFL. We're not asking you to be the now defunct.
All kickers stink.
Now, no more Arena Football League.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah.
You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's over.
Sad.
Poor Arena Football
League. I saw an Arena Football League preseason game in the city of Toronto.
Wow. How was that?
It was quite a thing. The Toronto Phantoms, I want to say that they were called. I saw a preseason game down at Scotiabank Arena, Air Canada Center at the time.
That had to feel pretty trashy.
I don't remember how I ended up there. or why I accepted the invitation.
You love those events, though. You're into monster trucks. That's where you take your son. You like Arena Football League.
Oh,
like,
heck yes.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Rich Ben Ennis. Who would know? This is what every show is doing today, right? Mm-hmm. Kicking dirt on the Patriots?
Yep. I would caution people doing that. We're going to do it. And there's reasons, right? Like, who's having the unabashed conversation of like, yeah, well, it's definitely over and Tom Brady's done. And like, this team is obviously going out in the divisional round. Like, that's clear. It's open and shut case. Like, why are we even, nobody's doing that, right? Like, everybody's couching their takes with it's the Patriots. Oh, you're going to go beyond? Because
yeah, I want to be first.
I'm still going to couch it because let's take you, let's all get in our way back machine, okay? Let's get in there. Turn it on, crank it up, the flux capacitor, to 1 year ago, December. A pretty brutal loss to two non-playoff teams. Now, of course, the Steelers were very close to being a playoff team, but weren't. They lose to the Miami Dolphins on a horrible last-second kickoff return. And, yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers, guess what happened? They were fine. Now, a lot of that had to do with Rob Gronkowski returning to form in the postseason, but there were questions about this team going into the playoffs last year too.
This happens a lot. I remember when they lost to the Chiefs a few years ago and we were talking about
that's the number one.
No, I'm just saying that of course we've done this before because the Patriots are a dynasty, and so like they're at least the modern day version of a dynasty. They're the most successful North American franchise in my lifetime. And so yeah, when I look at them, it's hard to say, well, it's over because we've been down this road before. I'm getting ahead of this. It's over. They're not winning the Super Bowl this year. The only reason that you would even believe that they have a slight chance is the same reason that they made it last year, which is their division and their conference stink. It was the Chiefs. They had to beat the Chiefs, and they beat the Chiefs last year. Yeah. Who's the next best team? The next best team was probably the Steelers, who completely fell apart throughout the season and didn't make the playoffs.
I mean, the Chargers were pretty damn good last year, too.
The Chargers,
and they
as
showed
always,
up to be frauds.
Were frauds. That, the Chargers. That's what I'm saying. If the Chargers are the
they
team
went tooth and nail with the Chiefs throughout the regular season.
If the Chargers are the team that you're pointing to in any year other than LT years, then it's just, that's case in point, case closed. This year, there's two teams that the Patriots have to go through. One of them is the Ravens, who now own home field advantage. The whole reason to believe in the Patriots was that everything went through Foxborough, and watching someone go there and have to play in those elements and that type of a football game, that was a big story. Now they play the Chiefs this week. I think there's a pretty good chance that the Patriots lose this football game against the Chiefs, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say there's at least a decent chance they lose that game to the Bills now as well?
Yeah, I mean, it was a one-score game the first time they met.
Big time. So I think it's becoming more and more likely that the Ravens are going to take home field advantage. And now it's not going to have to go through New England. And without having home field advantage, I don't see it happening. I don't see them beating the Chiefs in a playoff game. I don't see them beating that Ravens team in a playoff game. We just saw them lose to Houston. And I know, granted, Houston would have to go to New England, but we just saw what they looked like against that team. And their defense, I thought that was a game where New England's defense was perfectly suited to stop that team. Like, good secondary, be able to lock up Hopkins, good dial up some blitzes like the Ravens did. Remember the Ravens game? Ravens don't have a talented front seven. The Patriots have a more talented front seven than the Ravens. And the Ravens got to Deshaun Watson. They sacked him a bunch of times. And maybe that game flips on its ear if that one Patriots linebacker is able to pull down Deshaun Watson on a drive that results in a touchdown. But they did not pressure him the same way that we've seen other teams get to him. And I think that their front seven's a little slow. I think their front seven's slow, and I don't think they have playmakers. I think Tom Brady has clearly taken a step back, and I don't care. I'm kicking dirt on Tom Brady. He's not done. He's not the worst quarterback in the NFL anymore, but he's not a top 10 quarterback anymore. He's a game manager, and he doesn't have the weapons that
that's the key.
He needs to be a breakout player. Like, it's
there's
just
nobody coming back here.
He's
there's
getting mad.
Well, Gronk isn't coming back.
Yeah,
we're past the deadline here, unless there's some scenario in which Antonio Brown is not suspended and, you know, his tweets and his fawning over Robert Kraft results in him somehow returning to this Patriots. Dude.
Like, if there was ever an organization to do it.
That's the nightmare scenario because he changes everything. Huh. And there's a reason why they were so feverish in their attempt to go get him in the first place. They know this. They know the score. They know that what they have currently on offense in the passing game isn't nearly enough.
Yeah, I'm willing to do it. I don't think that this team can win a Super Bowl this year. Like, I don't see it. I don't think they're talented enough. And you know how we love to do the game of, hey, what would this team be without quarterback X or just a quarterback who's a wins above replacement guy? Like, what would the Seahawks look like without Russell Wilson this season? Because that's his case for MVP, right?
Yeah.
Is that team is not nearly as talented around, like as a complete football team as the Ravens are. So what would the Seahawks look with just an average quarterback? They'd be bad. They'd be well outside the playoffs. What would the Patriots look like without Bill Belichick? Even with that record, even with that conference, even with that schedule that they've had so far, which is, again, it's been a cupcake schedule for them. They do not have a wow win against a really tough opponent. And I know that we talked about this last week about the idea of there's so many bad teams in the NFL now that it's actually really difficult to compile a good schedule unless you play in the NFC West, yeah, where three of maybe all four of the teams are at least decent, but three of the teams are pretty good. You go through that schedule and you start to wonder, with that talent the Patriots have, how much we overrated them. Remember the world's best defense? Didn't look like world's best defense yesterday against good offense. No. Didn't look like world's best defense against the Ravens with another good offense.
But honestly, like, the defense is secondary to me. To me, it's the offense. You scored 22 points against one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Like, DVOA, I think, had that Houston defense at, like, 28.
Yeah, they're not very
good. In the NFL?
They're not very good.
They were stinking. And they couldn't do anything. And Tom Brady's yelling at his receivers, trying to coach him up, make him more explosive. Like, you're going to tell a receiver. That cracks me up. Hey, just be more explosive.
Yeah.
Be more athletic.
Yeah.
No, okay. Right. I was holding back. I wasn't doing that before. Now I'll just be more explosive. I'll get separation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't been able to do it all game. Mm-hmm. One-on-one coverage, no problem. I'll be sticking my hand in the air. I'm open.
I just don't see that talented of a football team. And I feel like if Bill Belichick wasn't their coach, and of course he is, and so it's kind of a stupid game to play, but that we're just looking at a very, very mediocre football team.
All right. I think we're probably going to come back around overreactions, but let's start them now.
I overreacted.
I think he loses to the Chargers. So I think that tonight they are going to take an L, and the Raiders will be in first place momentarily. And as we go through this thing, obviously the Chiefs have a week to kind of worry about the issues that they have against the Chargers. The Oakland Raiders are going to go to the New York Jets, who are actually playing really good football. But I'm still going to give them a win
here. Last couple weeks, they put up a ton of points.
They have been, yes. So, and then we go, obviously, the big matchup, which has now been flexed. Raiders at the Chiefs. That's not an easy place to play. It's very difficult. But the Raiders are going to find a way to win that football game.
Wow. Overreacted? Is that your explanation?
Yeah, quick one on that. The Raiders are the biggest frauds. Like, we shouldn't throw around fraud as much as we do, although it's fun to say.
It
like
is
the
really
word itself
say.
Is yeah, super so fun. So like, great. The Patriots aren't frauds.
No.
But the Raiders are frauds.
Yeah, Raiders are frauds.
They're horrible point differential.
Well, they scored a garbage time touchdown in that game where the Chiefs just laid down and said, yeah, sure, I guess if this means that much to you, you can have it. But without that garbage time touchdown at the very end of the game, they scored 6 points combined against the New York Jets and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Now we're having conversations about, like, Chiefs defense? Like, underappreciated?
Maybe. Yeah, underappreciated. No. Yeah, you're right. If we did, we should do, instead of power rankings, fraud rankings, because that's really fun.
They're number one.
Without a doubt. They are the most fraudulent of frauds. It's just, it's over.
I don't know how you evaluate. Like, the draft class is still good, and there's obviously
an excellent draft
some pieces there.
And you feel thrilled that you have
Mayock
and more picks.
Pass rusher that they got. Yeah, like, he's good, and Jacobs is great. Like, that's all good. But, yeah, they got some work to do there, especially on the defensive end.
They need some more receiving talent because, really, they have Darren Waller. Mm-hmm. That's their, and then their next best pass catcher is Washington out of the backfield. Like, that's it. That's what they have there. So they're going to need to draft or develop or sign some wide receivers. Like, it's pretty clear why they went after Antonio Brown because, like, yeah, they don't have another weapon for Derek Carr. I think he's done enough this season to merit getting another year. But I do wonder if they will also do the move of, listen, Derek, you're the starter, but Gruden's going to get somebody behind you.
Yeah.
He's going to have his piece. He's going to work with that piece. And speaking of pieces that got drafted behind and got developed a little slower, that's going to be one of my overreactions. Drew Locke throws a beautiful football. I don't know how much you watched the Broncos game. It was actually ended up being...
I mean, who didn't watch the end?
Yeah.
What happened? The end? Because the Raptors game was obviously on. It was like, I think I missed the start of the third quarter of the Raptors game because I was watching the Broncos.
I think I missed that pass interference. I just got a text from you that said Chargers. And I knew it was bad. And I had told you that I had the Chargers in a money line parlay because I figured that how is Drew Locke going to win this football game? The MO on him was that there was just so much development to do, and I didn't think that he could get that good behind all season. But I just watching him play, he delivers a really nice football. And the Chargers caught up and they slowed him down in the second half. But I was pretty impressed. That Chargers defense is no slouch. And he made some real plays against them. And I'm actually excited to watch him play moving forward, just because, like, this is what the Broncos needed. Their whole infrastructure is solid. They've got really good pieces. Their line is good on both sides. They have a good secondary.
They have a good running back.
They've got good running back, plural. Mm-hmm. They've got good wide receivers. Like, Cortland Sutton is a real, real player. Mm-hmm. And all they've been really missing is that finding that quarterback piece. And if Drew Lock can be that guy, that's a scary team moving forward.
1-for-4 for John Elway, if that's the case.
Good for John Elway. I'd be super proud of him. I think the Panthers need to strip it down. I don't know how you come back next season with Cam Newton and try to run this thing back. Like, I think you trade him at his value and you start moving forward. The question is, what do you do with Christian McCaffrey if that's the case? Mm-hmm. Because you don't rebuild around a running back, and his trade value will never be higher. But he's probably so beloved by that franchise because, of course, why wouldn't he be? Like, he's almost an automatic 100 all-purpose yards every single game. But what's that worth on the open market? Does someone actually trade for Christian McCaffrey knowing that you have to give him a big contract and, you know, he has a position where, while he is special, we would have said the same things about Alvin Kamara last year, and one injury has completely changed the outlook of what he's going to make this offseason. Mm-hmm. Or Le'Veon Bell is another example of a guy on a bad team who really doesn't, he doesn't score the way that he used to. He doesn't play the way that he used to.
Yeah, that division's totally in flux there with the coaches. Because Ron Rivera is probably going to be out there.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that...
Who knows what the Bucs are going to do with Jameis? Are they going to try and run it back?
I don't think so. I think the Bucs have to do the same thing. That's why that division is so strange. I think that
Dan Quinn's out, probably. Yeah.
And Drew Brees is 41.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird division.
I know. So is everyone going to be stripping it down at the same time? Like, obviously the Saints won't. Mm-hmm. They have the best contingency plan, and they would still look good with or without Drew Brees. We already saw it this year. I don't see the path forward for the Panthers right now. Like, that team is bad. That team is bad, bad, bad. I cannot believe they even strung wins together this year. Like, the defense just gave up 30 points to Washington.
Yeah, I know. That was bad. That's not what you want. I mean, they did it all on the ground, and their hallmark early in the season when the defense was good was stopping the pass, and the Redskins are like, fine, we don't pass.
But it's Adrian Peterson. Do you see that one move AP made in that game? He had a little stop and start move.
I don't know.
But and then, I think that the most underrated thing of the last 2 years has been Adrian Peterson. Yeah. Like, he's on the Washington team that no one cares about. They're completely irrelevant. They're just this joke of a franchise. But remember, they started this season by trying to bury AP.
Yeah.
They said, no, AP's done. It's over. No more Adrian Peterson.
Geis got hurt again, which is what he does.
But he's having another terrific year. And I know that, and deservedly so, there has been a lot of accolades to Frank Gore this season for passing Barry Sanders. But I don't know why we haven't spoken a little bit more about Adrian Peterson and the accomplishment that he's doing or that he's achieving at his age, with that team, with these numbers.
Yeah. He was on my fantasy bench yesterday. It doesn't matter, though. I'm going to beat you in fantasy this week. No big deal.
I know.
NBD. All right.
I mean, turns out starting Nick Foles was a bad idea for
me. Yeah, -3 points. That's not what you wanted to hear, quarterback. All right, when we come back, Good Show's Leafs Hour brought to you by Drive Auto Group, fueled by customer expectations. Justin Bourne in studio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, back to Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Show Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, JD Bunkus. It's an exciting time to be a fan of basketball in this country and a fan of the national team. Everybody's showing out this summer in Victoria, the last chance Olympic qualifying tournament. We assume everybody also includes Andrew Wiggins, although yet to see pen to paper on that. Let's talk to a guy who knows this national team rather well. Former participant in the national program, Carl English, former Canadian men's basketball team member, GM and player for the St. John's Edge of the National Basketball League Canada, co-writer of Chasing a Dream, the Carl English story he co-wrote with our pal Blake Murphy. Carl's on the line right now. Carl, thanks for doing this.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
How was spending all that time with Blake Murphy? Do you guys, do you like force some like wrestling talk in like every once in a while? Like there was a little lull in the conversation. He's like, you watch Raw?
He loves his wrestling just like a lot of Newfoundlanders. So yeah, we had a great time.
How cathartic was writing that book for you?
I put this book off for a long time. I was the first approach for this book, freshman in Hawaii when we made the tournament. And, you know, each year when that happens, they dig into each team. And when they found out my story, they CBS sent a crew down here. CBC National sent a crew. And then once they got to realize where I came from and the story got out, I was kind of approached from then on. And I kind of put it off because I knew there was a lot of demons there that I'd have to come to face. And I just felt now was the time when I came back home and saw the reaction and the work I was doing in the community and how it was affecting people. I said, why not? Let's do it. But it was a very painful process.
So it was painful, but once you were through it and once you got to read your words on the paper and you and Blake had finished the project, did you feel a sense of relief that you had done it?
Yeah, I think once I read it and it came to light, because you never know how it's going to turn out. It's kind of like an athlete. I think every athlete is probably their biggest fear of failure, you know, and that's kind of what motivates you as well. And I think this was similar to a story like that. And once I read it and I was like, wow, this is told really well. And I hope people understand the message I'm trying to get out there. But then it's my story because people know parts of it. People only know, tragedy, and they don't understand and getting cut and not making the NBA. But there's so much more to it. There's the process and getting to Ontario from a town of 30 people. There's the hardships of overcoming and obviously dealing with a tragedy. But then how did that affect me through the years? Because it just don't go away. It kind of leaves you and it haunts you. And then my uncle died when I was 20, when I returned home from Hawaii. I mean, he dropped dead when we were fishing. So there's these type of things that, you know, people don't really know about me. And then, you know, the European circuit and close to getting back to the NBA and then the injuries and then all the Canada basketball stuff. So there's a lot to be in there. And it's a story about motivation. I mean, determination, perseverance, to say the least, and, you know, dealing with hardship.
No, it's an incredible, incredible story. And you've been through so much. If it was just a basketball story, too, it would be incredible. A guy from where you grew up making it to the heights that you've made in basketball. Now, professional basketball is like a dream that seems more realistic to kids in this country now, Carl. Could 20-year-old Carl, 20 years ago, have thought, you know, man, in 20 years, there's going to be 20 Canadians in the NBA. What if I had told you that 20 years ago?
Not a chance. It was just things have changed so much, man. It's like, I feel now the pipeline is there. I'm not sure who can pinpoint. I think there was a lot of collective people that had their fingerprints on all of it over the years. But now to say there's 20 guys in the NBA, I think second to the Americans, is a fabulous story. I mean, when I was there, there was just Jamal and Steve, obviously, and I was the next up and coming, and it just went on through generations. But it was, it's crazy, man. The amount of talent that's there now is unfathomable.
Yeah. What would you say is the biggest reason for that? Like, I don't mean in terms of Vince Carter or Steve Nash or different players and the visibility of the sport or even with the Raptors. I just mean, how has it changed for you from the challenges of when you were playing and the pipeline and the development system to what we have now?
Well, I think first and foremost is we're in this era of social media and, I mean, obviously the internet. I posted a thing a few months ago when I was digging up for the book, and I came across this box, and inside of it was all the addresses that I had. So when I went to Ontario, the teachers went on strike. So I went to St. Thomas Aquinas because Andre Sola went there, and he went to George Washington. So I just picked one school in Toronto, and I went there because I was chasing a dream, trying to get a scholarship. And when I got there, the teachers went on strike. So my way of trying to get them to notice me, I went and made a highlight tape in the gym, and I put a game that I played back home in Fatima in grade 11, and I sent it to 120, 150 schools. I made all these tapes in the video room, went to Staples and bought boxes of VHSs, and I sent it all out. Well, first and foremost, kids are not doing that today. I think kids are getting ranked when they're 12 and 13. You know, it's crazy the path that I had to take and fellow other Canadians to what they have to do now. It's just, it's so easier to find talent right now. And I think that's no longer is it the difference between the age and the diversity of the distance, you know, the world has become so much smaller because of social media and the internet.
Yeah, I'll forgive you for going to St. Thomas. I went to Oakville Trafalgar High School, so we were rivals.
Well, if I had to have sense, I would have crossed the road and went to Trafalgar, because then I would have got recruited, because you were a public school.
That's right. It's true. You know, it worked out all right. You went to Hawaii, which was a good call. The kid from Newfoundland going to Hawaii, that was probably an easy decision, I imagine.
Well, it was beautiful there. I joke about it. Hawaii is very similar to Newfoundland minus the weather. I mean, very, very rugged coastlines in Newfoundland. It's a beautiful island, beautiful people. It's just our weather in Newfoundland is so much better than Hawaii.
All right. So the book is, I would have never actually followed you down that line, but you made a lot of sense there. We're talking to Carl English. The book is Chasing a Dream. The Carl English story in the book can be purchased in Chapters. It's available on Amazon, and it's being sold at local bookstores in Newfoundland. The foreword authored by Steve Nash, and some incredible players in this book told stories about. What's your favorite story from the book?
To me, there's so many. There's a lot of good national team stuff. You know, when we struggled for years to qualify for anything. So once we qualified in Dominican, we stayed at a different resort, but we went back to this first one where we were training, and we went to the middle of nowhere, and we're all thinking like, where the hell are we going, you know? And sure enough, it was at the first hotel we stayed in, and Coach Routens was there, and he was like, you know, this is where it all started for us. And we all just took off celebrating. We ran out into the ocean. Half of us had clothes on, half of us didn't, but that was a good one. But I think what touched me the most is, I was really happy what Steve wrote. Then I have a bunch of testimonials. So in the back of the book, there's testimonials by players all around the world, different teammates from the national team to in Europe to NBA coaches to national team coaches with Coach Triano. And, you know, Phil Handley is in there, and it goes right down to Kyle Wilshire, Melvin Ejim, Jesse Young, Leo Routens is in there. You know, there's a lot of testimonials. Basically, I just reached out to some of my friends and said, guys, what's the first thing when you think of my name comes up? And then they gave a few comments in there, and, you know, to see what other people think of me, and hopefully they're not lying. it's nice. And, you know, there's parts of the book there that it took me way back, man. Like I said, me and Blake sat down for over 50 hours when he came to Newfoundland and just recorded. And then we went back and forth for hours upon hours to tweaking it. And once you put it all there and you put it all out there, you know, it's really, really special. And then like the positive feedback that I'm getting on it now is tremendous. And when someone sent me a link, you go on, I don't know if it still is, but on Amazon, it was the number one bestseller right now for sports body autobiographies and things. And I mean, that's amazing. So hopefully my story can help people that are struggling with a similar type of tragedy or any type of diversity or adversity in their life. And, you know, there's so much, it's a different life we live in now than when I did. And, you know, for people to see the path that I've taken and not giving up, I think that's a story in itself.
Well, I think that was a big thing for a lot of just Canadian basketball players that were starting out, even athletes in other sports, was being able to identify and see people who had, you know, taken those difficult paths, and to be at least able to understand that, you know, it is possible. And I don't think that there's anything that's more motivating than that. And it wouldn't really, I think that you wouldn't have asked those people to write those testimonials for you if, you know, you didn't feel comfortable about who you were and, you know, some tenor of what was going to come back. So, yeah, man, it's an incredible accomplishment. We definitely congratulate you on it. And, you know, you mentioned qualifying. And, yeah, the international program was under a lot of heat. Like, last time we talked to you, it was under completely different premises, as it was everybody had pulled out. And everybody was pulling out essentially at the last minute. And now you have guys coming forward saying they're going to be there regardless. And what do you think has happened here? Like, is this just a lot of it being in Canada, it being in the backyard, that it's a little bit more convenient? Or do you think that the pressure or the discussion around the program from this past year has really changed some guys or opened guys' eyes up to wanting to be a part of this or the need to be a part of this?
I had the same discussion on The Athletic, and I'll be brutally honest with it, because I told you guys last time we spoke, you know, and I would tell you more insight, and there's more insight in the book. It's not an easy decision. You know, it's a decision that factors in so many different things. So let me be perfectly clear when I say everybody, unless coming up through had a bad experience, everybody, including poor Wiggins that gets crucified, everybody wants to play for their country, right? They all want to play. Don't get it twisted. But then you got to think about all then you weigh out the positives and negatives. The big one that comes into play is obviously the insurance, injury, and, you know, some guy, let's take it, and everybody's different. If you're a superstar, I would even go as far as saying you might have a better chance of getting to superstars because they're taken care of. They're covered by their team. They should be covered by NBA insurance. It's the guys that are fighting to get into rotation. If they get injured, well, it's a major setback. They could lose their contract or they could get cut from the team. Or the guys that are on these two-way contracts. Or the guys that are fighting, you know, they're trying to crack into the starting lineup and they're right there. Because if you go out, let's look at Kelly this summer. So Kelly's finally getting back into the rhythm. When I saw Kelly this summer, he was en route to going to having the career or having the season that he's having right now. But that's been delayed 2 to 3 months because he got hurt this summer. So you can say it and you can face it and you can call it what you want, but there's a lot of pressure. And then we have to look on it. We all want them to play for our own selfish reasons because we all truly believe that they will achieve a medal if every one of these guys commit to Team Canada. Am I fair in saying that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
In fact, yeah
everybody knows
be a favorite.
That. We'd be a favorite, right? We're up there with America, and depending on how to play, the tournament goes. But as the tournament goes on, the team starts gelling, understanding the FIBA rules. I've been through it for 15 years. You know, towards the end of the tournament, you're playing your best basketball. So we can all agree that Canada, if everybody showed up, they're in favor to win a medal. The issue being is we all get offended or we all get upset when they don't come out and we don't understand that they're their own personal reasons. And each person has a different thing. Like Tristan this summer, if Tristan's contract is not figured out, how can you expect that man to come play? You know, and it might be, it could be a contract negotiation. It could be, let's say Denver goes deep into the playoffs. Jamal wants to play. He publicly announced it. Jamal's a great guy. Of course he wants to play for Team Canada. But let's say Jamal goes into June 17th or June, you know what I mean, and they make a deep run. Do you think Denver Nuggets are going to want him to play?
No.
Right, so there's all the things that each situation is going to be different. You know, each situation, you have to look at each one of them different, and then it becomes the insurance like I touched on before. I got hurt with Team Canada in 2012 and didn't have my insurance covered, and I lost millions of dollars. But, you know, is that a story? Yes, it should be. Like, these are the things that people don't know. You know what I mean? So there's stuff that's out there that, you know, that everybody tries to hide because it's politically correct and there's this and that. But I think we have to look at each story individually, and let's hope that we can put the best 12 Canadians on the floor, because if we do, we are a powerhouse. Yeah. And we're all selfish in wanting that, which is acceptable.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is that there's never going to be a perfect situation. And whoever signs up to play for Canada in whatever event it is they're making sacrifices, right? Like, that's part of it.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy.
But I think this year, with having it in Toronto or in Victoria, I think it's huge. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another thing I think NBA teams worry about. Well, what country is it in if a guy goes down? I think a lot of people was a wake-up call for Paul George, but luckily that happened on American soil, correct? Like, what happens if that's in, you know, in one of these crazy countries where you don't have the best doctors in the world? So there's some of this stuff there that we all have to look at and understand that this might be the perfect storm that everybody's waiting for, and they all might come out, and then we're like, okay, now come mess with us. That's what we're all hoping for.
Yeah, that is the hope. Right. Yeah, everybody shows out. I mean, they even with Giannis in the same group, they should be able to pull through and end up in the Olympics.
Well, it's just Giannis. If you guys follow that international media, and I played in Greece, so you guys don't understand passion. when you go play in passion or you go play in Greece, there's stories in my book when, you know, you're getting attacked, right? Like, I've had flares thrown at our team. You know, I've had people throwing, like, I was on the road. I'll tell you this one story, and then I'll tell you about what I'm getting at. But I was on the one story. So in Greece, road fans are not allowed to travel. They're not allowed in. So our fans stormed the gym. The police attacked them. They attacked them back, and they kept on coming in. There was 400 of them attacked the gym, came on in. So then they come with riot gear, throw the tear gas. We exited the game, went outside the doors, waited for the tear gas to leave, then we went back in, played the game. So in that game, I start talking noise like I normally do, getting going, getting hype, had 30-something, and I start doing the shush to the crowd. One guy peed in a bottle and threw it at me. I dodged it. Yeah. All the security ran out onto the court, covered me, and like, English, no talk today. And it was crazy. So if you understand the passion that the Greece Federation has, well, they publicly came out and said that if Patino was coaching the national team, the rivalry team's players, which is three or four of them, are not going to play. Yeah. So if that happens, they will stick, because for this reason, they want the other team won't honor their contracts when they come back, because that's how much the rivalry is there. So unless Patino is canned, which I'm not sure he'll do, well, you might have a depleted team that shows up for Greece.
Yeah, if you played international ball and you didn't have a pee bottle thrown at you, yeah, were you ever even good? Yeah, were you even good? Like, no. That's like should be the test. It's like, that's your other stat.
It's like, how many pee bottles were thrown at
you? Like,
what's your ratio?
Yeah. How many pee bottles?
Yeah. What are the advanced stats on your pee bottles? Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's what you have to keep track in the back. I didn't do that. In the back of the book where I had index, I should have had a pee bottle.
Yeah, you should have. Yeah, next time.
Carl, I can't wait to read the book. Congrats on the early success and the release, and thanks for doing this. This was great.
Awesome, guys. Thanks for having me. Let me know what you guys think when you read it, and I'm back up in Toronto. I think I'm going to do a tour there, some local media. So if I'm around, if you guys want to chat, I'll be around.
Absolutely, man. We'd love to have you in studio.
All right, guys.
Talk to you, Carl.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
You too, you too.
Carl English. Yeah. The book is Chasing a Dream, the Carl English story, co-written by Blake Murphy.
We could have gone so much longer with Carl. But I think that's the thing, is that I think a lot of people do understand that it is a sacrifice. Maybe they don't, that you do take some risk on yourself, but that there's also reward for the player for too, sure. Right? Like that for this sure. is.
If there wasn't, then no one would do it.
Well, that's just it, is that wouldn't you want to feel what that is like being at an Olympics with your peers from your country being celebrated by your nation for your accomplishments and not doing it for money? Mm-hmm. Like, it's been a while since these guys have played, or not, I guess, been a while, but when will you get the opportunity to not play for cash anymore in a meaningful game? Mm-hmm. How different is it going to feel? Like, you and I have talked about this, and everyone does. When you watch the NCAA and you do watch the tournament, and all of its flaws aside, you do just get to watch guys essentially playing for the love of the game. And there's something about international basketball that is different than watching an NBA game.
You think, hey, RJ Barrett's a pro, man. Like, yeah. He's a pro, and he straps it on, and he suits up, and he's like, I'm killer. Every single game, getting up for it. You think by game 82, RJ Barrett will have felt the same passion for playing for this moribund New York Knicks team as he will if he gets into those games in that Olympic qualifying tournament on home soil in June? Like, it's not going to be close. Not to speak for RJ. Feel pretty confident in saying that.
Same.
All right. When we come back, going to talk to former Pro Bowl defensive end Cliff Averill next. It's Good Show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to the Leadoff Podcast with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Let's go. This is Good Show. Good Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good little run of primetime games. Your Seattle Seahawks at home against the Minnesota Vikings tonight.
Someone accused me of being a Patriots fan on Twitter yesterday, which was quite the accusation, I had to say. I was like, how do you follow me on Twitter and not know I'm a Seahawks fan? How is that possible? I tweet about how Russell Wilson's MVP every single week. And then every show I come on here, I pigeonhole Seahawks.
And also, a fan of any New England sports team has a feel, a look to them. Like, there's no
sports team, a region of sports teams that I would be more offended to be accused of being a fan of than the Patriots, the Bruins, or the Red Sox. Yeah. Let's be frank here. And the Revolution. God forbid, somebody said, Ben Ennis, I heard you're a New England Revolution fan. I would spit on that person.
I thought you wouldn't even say their name. I thought you omitted it just to make sure that we did not have to hear the team name New England Revolution uttered on this radio show. No, I was
a big fan of the British Empire, and you would make a joke about that in your team name.
I commented on that catch yesterday online that was overturned, but that was ridiculous. The one that they said was a Will Fuller touchdown, that would have been the worst catch call in the history of the game.
Oh, yeah, that they overturned.
Yes, I know. Thank goodness they did. But even that they called it on the field, I'm like, the football's right there, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, it's on the ground. You can see it right there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I guess that's the better move to do. They're doing that now with touchdowns, where they do with fumbles, where we know it's an incomplete pass, but they let it play out because they wanted to be able to
do it. Well, I mean, the big giveaway was Will Fuller wasn't that upset about it. He was like,
they gave me a touchdown for that.
You guys saw the rest of it. Like, I did catch it at first, but then it was like, it was poked free. It's all right. They scored, what was it, the next play?
Or not the next play, but the third down play. Just quickly before we talked to Cliff Avril. We were discussing during the Leafs Hour the idea of Mitch Marner when he returns, where he was going to play. And as of right now, just it's maybe not nothing, but Marner's skating with Tavares and Mikheyev. And Hyman is with Kerfoot and Kapanen. So maybe.
That was kind of prescient by you.
Yeah, I mean, I just said you have to ask the questions. But anyways, back to the NFL.
All right, let's get to it. 11:29, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It is good show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, very happy to be joined now by former Pro Bowl defensive end Cliff Avril on the line right now. Cliff, thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. How you guys doing this morning?
Doing well, man. It was a good slate of 1 o'clock games. Maybe the biggest drop-off ever in games from 1 to 4 o'clock. Although, I guess we got the end of that Chargers game, which was pretty fun. Do you like that pass interference call there by the officials? Like, do you like them taking over that game with that? Because it was it's kind of a ticky-tack call, in my opinion.
I would agree. You know, the way that game played out, like, the officials have to let the games play out, not necessarily be the determining factor in a sense, right? You know, but I also understand, and this is just my opinion, honestly, is fantasy football plays a role in all this. Gambling plays a role in all this. And how they go about making sure that, you know, the offense has the upper hand. And maybe I'm biased because I'm a defensive player. But, yeah, I thought that was a ticky-tack call, and it could have gone without.
Yeah, it was just that if it was something where I thought the guy was going to be able to make a play and that he actually interfered with him making a catch, I'd say okay. But it was like they're running side by side. He kind of cuts him off a little bit. The ball's well overthrown. In fact,
but we get to make fun of the Chargers. It's awesome.
I know. That's true, though. Do you think – let's start with this. Do you think the Chargers are cursed? Because they have – like, it's almost like they're playing a game where they're trying to prove to everyone they can lose in every horrific way possible. Is that on the table?
You know what? I feel bad for them, you know, especially Philip Rivers being there for so long and never really winning anything, you know, and considered one of the best to do it. But there has to be something going on because they find ways to lose games, unfortunately. And poor Philip Rivers. That's all I can really say.
Okay. So poor Philip Rivers. Although who hasn't enjoyed watching Philip Rivers talk trash every single game and have those moments of panic and try to put the Chargers in those drives? That's all I'm going to, if Philip Rivers does get into the Hall of Fame, his bust should be him yelling. Like, it's like, that's a no brainer. Just make it with him with his mouth open, yelling at somebody and maybe even have
we need a play clock. With one on it.
Yeah. Behind maybe an official that he's yelling at also built into the bust. That would be incredible. But I was actually thinking about this watching that game because he throws the interception early that really comes back to haunt them. And I thought he played okay. He's played better than he has in the last couple of weeks. But he and Eli Manning have a similar thing to me where both guys played a really long time. And so they're accumulating stats, right? Philip Rivers continues to add to his passing yards. Yeah. He continues to add to his touchdowns. And at the end of his career, that's going to be the stuff that we focus on more than anything, right? Where he finishes on the passing charts and where he came up with cumulative stats. Why is it that with guys that have longevity but really struggle for years at the end, we don't factor that in a little bit more when we're evaluating the career on a whole?
You know what? That's a good question. But I also think, I mean, you're comparing Eli to Philip. The difference is Eli has two of them.
Right.
He has two Super Bowls. So and most times than not, you know, you base, you know, how great you were off of championships first and foremost, and then you look at the stats. But unfortunately for Philip, he doesn't necessarily have the championships. But, yes, he is kind of patting his stats in a sense. And I think the quarterback position, honestly, is – one of the few positions where that is the case, right? Where your team might not necessarily be good. You might not win a lot of games, but boy, you threw for 15,000 yards, you know, so you're a Hall of Famer or whatever the case may be. And I get confused with that sometimes, but playing against Philip Rivers and understanding how hard it is to win, how hard it is to stay in the NFL and be consistent with the way, you know, he's been able to perform. It's hard to say he won't be in those talks of being a Hall of Famer or anything like that because of the longevity. Because longevity in the NFL is extremely hard, and we all know that. So once we see players be able to do this for, you know, 14, 15, 16 years consistently, it's hard to take that away from them because of you know, just how hard it is to stay in the league.
It just sucks to me in evaluating a little bit, especially, and, you know, maybe this is a little bit pandering, but all right, what other position can you kind of hang around at where there's not better competition right behind you, right? Like with a quarterback, there's such a long leash for you getting to stick around. It's like, oh, you're defensive end? You don't get sacks anymore? You don't get pressures? Guess what? You're out of the league. Like there's no sticking around and then maybe accumulating some stats. Like it's over. There's no other position like that. You're a wide receiver. You can't get separation anymore. Like it's over. You're not accumulating stats anymore. Like that's it. You have to be effective. Quarterbacks, you can be there and you can be ineffective for essentially forever, for years and years and years. Like, how many years has it been since Eli Manning was good before he got benched? Five? Like, 6 years? It's been a while since Eli Manning was a guy that you were afraid of in a football game. And that just, it doesn't apply to other positions. And so when we look at these counting stats, I have a hard time saying, oh, yeah, that guy's a Hall of Famer, when the vast majority of his career, I was happy to bet against them.
I agree 1,000%. And me being a guy that chased quarterbacks down for a career, trust me, I would never take up for him if I didn't have to. But I will say that is the only position. You're correct. You know, everybody else has to perform at a high level throughout their career, or guess what? You get fired. But for some reason, you know, quarterbacks get that longer leash. But it's also due to the pay. You know what I mean? If you strike while the iron's hot, they get this new deal. They're not getting rid of you after they paid you so much money already. So they'll give you some wiggle room to kind of bounce back. Other positions, hey, you don't have any more guaranteed money, we're going to let you go. We don't care how much we paid you, unfortunately. So that's just the way of the NFL. They are the money makers, so they give those guys a longer leash than, say, everybody else.
We're talking to a former defensive end, Cliff Averill, you know, won a Super Bowl with J.D. Bunkus' Seattle Seahawks, and somehow we're like 5 minutes into this interview and we haven't talked about the Seahawks, and I'm gonna ask the first Seahawks question, which is like, Vegas just took a beating.
Didn't
right now
seem like a homer.
All right, so Cliff, a huge game for the Seahawks tonight against the Vikings. It looks like Jadeveon Clowney's back, but yeah, like early in the season it was Russ on this MVP pace carrying a bad defense. But last couple of weeks, and I know there's some weather concerns, and you know, maybe Philly just stinks, but like, do you think the defense has turned around?
I think they are gradually picking things up. So that's been my thing all season long. You know, people are like, oh, my gosh, you know, especially the big the pass rush has been the big knock on the defense, because you have a strong set of linebackers, you have some decent DBs, but the pass rush hasn't necessarily been there. And I've been telling people, I'm like, listen, Clowney, Ziggy, all those guys, they haven't played together. Clowney got here 3 days before a game, you know, so it's hard to get acclimated with the guys around you. But they are getting used to each other now. They're getting used to understanding each other's game and different things like that. So, yes, you do see these guys starting to pick up, and I do think the defense is going to continue to keep getting better, continue to keep finding ways to put themselves in great positions to give the offense the ball. So to answer your question, yes, I think they are getting better. Will they be that elite defense that we're used to seeing? Not, I don't think that would be the case, but I do see them being able to put their footprints on games a little more and giving Russell Wilson and that offense a little bit more opportunity to be able to score.
And that's really interesting, because we always talk about offensive lines gelling, right? That, oh, it's going to take some time for this offensive line to gel, but that's not really a thing that we mention with D-lines. It's just, yeah, okay, you're doing your own thing. You're an edge rusher. You get to the edge. So do you think we underestimate chemistry for a defensive line? Like, what does that mean, having chemistry on the D-line?
Oh yes, I think people definitely undervalue chemistry on the D line, and I would say look at like myself and Mike Beef, for example, Michael Bennett, when we played together, like we were always on the same wavelength, so that's why we were able to be so productive, understanding the system, understanding what the offense is going to do, everybody being on the same page and understanding what gaps you have and different things like that. So it does play a big role in everybody just gelling. It isn't just put your hand in the dirt and go. No, like you have to understand what kind of pass rusher is next to you so you can complement each other and be productive. But yeah, most people don't look at that. Most people think it's, downset Hutton, just go. There's a system behind it. There's a philosophy behind it for sure.
Where do you think has been the greatest area of growth for Russell Wilson? Like, I'm sure you still know guys and you talk to them as well. It could be like he seemed like a natural leader from the jump. There was, after the team started to break up, all the discussions of the different factions with the team. So maybe that was a little overstated. But he's been brilliant this season. I still think he is the MVP, even despite Lamar Jackson's stretch. Like, I just think he's done more with less than any quarterback in the NFL. But when you watch him play right now, how different is he from the guy that you remember, in his first few seasons in the league?
I mean, it's been crazy to watch his maturation through the years. Obviously being his teammate, winning Super Bowls with him, going to Super Bowl, with him. And, just watching how he's developed. Early on in his career, most people would say he's a runner more so than a passer. Kind of not similar to the Lamar situation, but, he would run the ball a lot quicker. If the first read isn't there, he'd take off. Now you see him going through his progression. You see him going to the first, second, third, and then maybe taking off and running. The running piece would be secondary for him now. Like, he's making all the right reads. He's understanding coverages. He's understanding pass rush as well. So just watching him grow in that space. And then, like you just said, right, he loses his number one target in Doug Baldwin this season, and yet Tyler Lockett, who has been productive through his career, but now he's taking a major stride, a major step, and him and Tyler are probably, honestly, the best wide receiver quarterback duo in the NFL as far as for yards and explosion plays and different things like that. So just seeing him continue to grow and making the players around him better. They just brought Gordon in a couple weeks ago, and you see him having confidence in Gordon and getting him the ball on some pivotal third downs and different things like that. So just his growth all around, just again, seeing the defense, understanding the guys he has around him and making those guys better, I think is the biggest thing that I've seen from Russell.
I wish you could have seen JD's face as you're talking about everything about the Seahawks, Cliff, because he loves them.
You and Michael Bennett specifically, like, those are great memories. Those are really, really great memories. See, thank you for the Super Bowl, Cliff. Like, thank you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for your time, buddy.
All right.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Cliff Averill, former Pro Bowl defensive end. All right.
That was always the thing that was a little understated with the Seahawks defense, was when they did win. Yeah, Legion of Boom was the headliners, right? Mm-hmm. It was, look at Legion of Boom. And then it was, look at Bobby Wagner. But really, if you ask Seahawks fans, it's like the linchpin of that team were the defensive ends, Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill. Like, they got both of those guys, Bennett, free agent, Cliff Averill, free agent. They had all that extra money to spend around Russell Wilson. Those guys were dominant. Dominant. So, yeah, that was a little treat. Thank you. Thank you for the treat, Buffo.
Okay, now it's gut punch time for you. Because congratulations to John Mulholland. Yeah. You've just won a $150 gift card to spend on a football jersey of your choice.
That's how you did that, eh?
Courtesy of coolbet.ca with the Cool Picks Challenge. Because you are smart. You're so smart. You picked Ben Ennis, who went 7-3. Should have been 8-2. I changed my pick from my lock of the Packers because I was like, this is getting boring. We all have consensus picks.
I switched on to the Jaguars. That might have, in hindsight, not been the best idea.
No, and I mean, you also had Nick Foles that you played in fantasy, which was also not a great idea. No. But yeah, Ben, I didn't realize this until this very moment.
No,
Jeff Lowe didn't go 5-5. He went 6-4.
I know. Next week he needs to go 4-6.
Oh, you don't care about J.D. Bungus going 2-8?
I don't even know how it's possible.
That's really bad. That's really terrible. It's bad at picking games.
I switched three picks, but even still, it's like maybe one was right. I wasn't paying attention. Here's the problem with this is that you will text me about my record in the Cool Picks Challenge that week, and you'll be like, I need this thing. And I'm desperately, with real money on the line, gambling on something else. I'm like, leave me alone about your playing for pride. But that's embarrassing. I will admit, this is the first time it's stung. Mm-hmm. Seeing you go 7-3 and me go 2-8.
What if I just did this and said that, yeah, this week I just smashed you in the Cool Picks Challenge. I'm about to smash you in fantasy, and I just know more about the NFL than you.
I I guess that's a fact.
I mean, it's eye test versus analytics.
Yeah.
The analytic community is like Ben Ennis knows more about the NFL than J.D. Bunkus.
They sure do.
Be sure to go to Cool Bet.
What's your record in that fantasy league, by the way? Am I your first win of the season?
No. This is going to be back-to-back wins, buddy. Oh, we're making a playoff. A charge. I think I might already be eliminated.
The playoffs are next week, bud.
Yeah. Be sure to go to coolbet.ca to enter the online pool for your chance at more prizes, including a flat screen TV and more. Visit sportsnet.ca/590 or coolbet.ca for details. I mean, you insult me and my fantasy team. You insult yourself because you just lost to them. When we come back, odds and ends. Good show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Missed an episode of The Scoreboard? Listen to every episode and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. More of Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Odds and ends. I just wanted to jump the gun on you here because you wrote my favorite odds and ends. We wrote them for each other. But you wrote this, and I didn't know this happened. I've not tracked this guy in years for pretty good reasons. But you just wrote, Curt Schilling deleted his Twitter account 10 years too late.
Yeah. So I actually... I mean, he was relevant to me on Twitter. First of all, Curt Schilling, great broadcaster, I will say. Like, he was great on Sunday Night Baseball.
All right. I pass on complimenting Curt Schilling.
The rest of it?
Yeah.
All of it is so bad. And I was actually, so you know what? You know what happens with Curt Schilling deleting his Twitter account?
Yeah.
It's one fewer person that blocks me on Twitter because I was blocked by Curt Schilling. You know what the blocking was for?
Calling him a Nazi sympathizer?
Along the lines, it was one of those, of course, horrible memes that he had involving Hitler. And I was like, hey, man, I was actually trying to give him some advice. I was like, just heads up, dude.
Yeah.
Good point of reference. Good thing to know and good little tip to keep in the back of your mind. If Hitler's involved, just probably
don't do it.
Don't do it. Yeah. Don't just the Nazis and Hitler, just steer clear of that entirely. Block.
Sucks that the Red Sox just got that championship because it would have been nice. It's fun. It's nice that the team that got them over the hump is like the team that no Red Sox fans like. Yeah, I remember. And Curt Schilling. Yeah, I remember Manny Ramirez. Yeah. They're all cheaters. They all cheated. And
sure.
The sock was fake. And then Schilling turned out to be who he is.
Yeah.
What's good about that Red Sox team? They're all cheaters. They were huge cheaters. They all pop for steroids.
Yeah, I know. So is everybody, though.
Yeah, okay.
So is everybody.
So what? That's not like I'm not going to throw that in Red Sox fans' faces time.
Everybody.
Yeah.
So is everybody. Not naming names, but yeah. Like, you like a baseball player and you hit a bunch of home runs? Yeah. Probably wasn't on the up and up.
I hate that, actually. I need the proof. Because that's what almost kept Edgar out of the Hall of Fame. And that drove me nuts. Was the
afraid to speak. I'm afraid to speak.
Oh, you want to go on that island?
No, I'm afraid to speak right now. I'm just afraid to speak. All right. So what did the other two things were put in by you?
I actually don't have enough. What do you want to talk about? Mandalorian or Carmelo Anthony? You can choose. Dealer's choice.
Well, I have Disney Plus.
Uh-huh. And you haven't watched Mandalorian yet?
No. And I didn't watch The Irishman yet.
I don't care. Okay. I never expected anything from you. That's the thing is I have low expectations of you. So
my dad watched it. He liked it.
I'm sure he did.
Said it was a little too long.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Great.
Tell her to send
the note to Scorsese,
okay.
Michael Ennis.
And I've been watching. I actually do have a Mandalorian thought because I've been rewatching the Star Wars movies, which I don't even know if I've watched them all start to finish. But I've been watching the first two, which I guess are whatever 4 or 5 in the series. I've watched with my 4-year-old son. Is he too young for that? I mean, we did just watch Luke Skywalker have his hand cut off.
Oh, you're asking, is it too violent?
Yeah.
No. No. It's fine. What's going to happen?
Luke Skywalker's going to have his hand cut off.
Yeah? So what? I don't know. I saw all those stuff. Like, my dad had no filter when it came to action movies. For us, it was swears, weirdly. It was like, I couldn't watch The Simpsons, but it was like Braveheart. My dad was sit down, watch this movie.
Was it actually Braveheart?
Yeah. I remember I watched Braveheart with him. He's like, this is good. I used to watch my goodness.
Like, the final scene of Braveheart, even at a 25-year-old, I was like, I don't know. I'll probably turn away from that when, his guts are being pulled out.
Buddy, I'm telling you, could straight up watch basically any action movie. The only part of Braveheart that got fast-forwarded was nude scene. It was like, zip, zip. All right, quick fast-forward here. Yeah. I'm like, what was that? It's like, don't worry about it. And swears, like, I couldn't watch Simpsons, or I wasn't supposed to watch Simpsons until, I don't even know, like, maybe 9 or 10. But, like, I remember that being no dice. My thought is this. The obsession over Baby Yoda is...
warranted.
Absolutely justified. The most justified take ever is that we can all, in a world that's so divisive, where we can't agree on anything, where we're just fighting on Twitter, who knew Baby Yoda was going to be the thing that brought us all back together? Like, it is the, what was the Leafs slogan back in the day? The passion that unites us. Yeah. That's now Baby Yoda. Like, my brother sent me a meme, and it's just a guy with a shocked face. It's like the first time we saw Baby Yoda, and it's like the 10,000th time I've seen Baby Yoda. It's the same face. I'm like, yeah. I love Baby Yoda. They could just do a show that's like a multi-cam showing Baby Yoda drink, like eat food and drink coffee. And I would watch the hell out of that show. Like, where's the Baby Yoda spinoff? Thank God that Yoda's age really slow, I guess, because spoiler, he's apparently 50. But
what? Hold on.
Yeah.
Okay, because I actually had an actual question because
Baby Yoda's 50 years old and they age super slow, but he's still cute as a Baby Yoda. There's nothing as cute as Baby Yoda.
I'm rewatching Star Wars. Second one, he arrives and he's talking about 800 years ago. So I don't understand that.
Yeah, dude, that's what I mean. So he's still a baby, but he's 50. But he's the cutest 50-year-old you ever did lay your little eyes on. Oh, man.
All right.
Baby Yoda for life.
All right. I can't wait to watch for Baby Yoda.
Oh, you are in for a treat, sir. Yoda drinking soup. Baby Yoda touching things he shouldn't. You name it. I'm in.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye.
Missed an episode of Hockey Central? Listen to every episode and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on Demand.